This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Welcome into Up in the Rafters, a podcast brought to you this basketball season by our friends over at Johnny T-Shirt. Co-hosting this, I'm Taylor Viplis. This year, I'm joined by national champion, the most outstanding player of the Final Four, and a Carolina basketball legend in every sense of the word, the ACC Network's Joel Berry. Joel, Carolina loses in the ACC championship game to NC State, but they beat Florida State in the quarterfinal. They beat Pitt in the semifinal. What were your biggest takeaways from the week in DC when it comes to UNC?
First off, man, how you feeling? Last time I saw you, you was hurting.
I think we were all hurting, man. seeing that red confetti fall on the floor and. Shout out a lot of people in DC. I will say what made it a really fun weekend is a lot of people came up to me and was like, "Hey, I love the podcast you and Joel do."
One of the guys,
I was getting ready to film my post NC State video, and some guy came up to me and he was like, "Hey, man, I just want to say like I love what you do at Inside Carolina, and like I'm thinking of you because I know how much this is gonna suck talking about this."
I could tell by the way you were setting up your equipment. You were like, "This is the last thing I want to do," so I had to check on you, man, before I got started. So, but no, man, it was
we're on to the tournament.
Okay, and it's sunny in Miami, so you're all good. Just had to check, but no, man, it was fun. The ACC tournament was great. I think you know, just regardless of it being NC State. Just to see them put themselves in rare company was exciting to see. 5 games in 5 days, very impressive. And they just had it going. But I think for Carolina, it was, you know, it's one of those things, man, you just got to tip your hat sometimes to a team that's playing really well. NC State came in, knew their season was on the line, and they just got it done. For Carolina, the one thing that stood out to me in that State game was, Just, I think it goes to show how important the other pieces are outside of RJ and Armando. I think Harrison Ingram and Cormac Ryan are very essential pieces that have to be productive and effective on the offensive end for Carolina to be good. And I just think the lack of that, the lack of those two guys and their scoring offensively hurt them in that championship game. But overall, outside of that, I was very impressed in the first two games that Carolina played. Just really put FSU out of their misery from start to finish. And then against a Pitt team that tries to kind of punk you in a way, it brings that physicality. I thought that Carolina matched that really well. And like I said, you got to tip your hat sometimes to a team that's playing really well. And NC State came in. They did what they needed to do. They controlled the pace of the game. They made shots. And they got after it defensively. And they just were hot. And sometimes that's all it takes.
Objectively, the college basketball fan in me DJ Burns, great story. DJ Horn, great player. When those two have it going on like they did Saturday night, it is a really fun team to watch. It's just more so the Carolina alum in me. Going into that game, I have to kind of sympathize with the North Carolina basketball team because NC State kind of came out and punched them in the mouth right away. And it felt like North Carolina was waiting for NC State to kind of get tired legs and kind of fall off, or North Carolina to make a run and State would just lay down and quit. But yeah, from the jump, you could tell that was really never going to happen. But where I have to sympathize with them is North Carolina probably came in with that mindset. And I had a similar mindset when I was going into that game. Carolina was what, a 10.5-point favorite. I turned to somebody with like 4 minutes left when Carolina was down like 10 or 11. And I was like, if I'm being honest, I never even considered this as a possibility.
Right. Man, it was crazy, man. I thought that NC State would come out and look a little tired, just because of given the situation of playing 4 games in 4 days even. And I thought they came out and had the energy early. They were very effective on the offensive end. It's one of those hard things that as a coach is like, what do you do with DJ Burns? And yeah, they started out double teaming, and I thought that kind of hurt them because he is a good passer. There are some bigs that you can double and you can take away, you know, you can be effective on them because they don't know how to pass the ball out of the double teams, but he can carve you up, man. And once he started doing that, they were just knocking down shots. I wasn't expecting for them to have a complete game like they did. Like, I thought they really came out well and played from the jump. But, you know, Carolina, they to beat a team like Carolina, you got to play damn near a perfect game. And they did that in a sense where they were just knocking down shots and really being effective on the offensive end.
Yeah, and for as bad as that first half was for Carolina at times, they go into half up one. And I think the sentiment from Carolina fans was like, we just played a terrible half and we're up one. So that has to be a good sign for the second half. But the reason why I wasn't in that camp from a Carolina perspective was NC State was doing almost everything that they wanted on the defensive end. And it didn't seem like Carolina had really any answers for what State was doing. There was a lot of miscommunications in screens and, you know, the drop coverage and Burns being able to do whatever he wanted. When you double him, he's making the passes out. When you don't double him, he's putting Carolina's guys basically through the basket, just on the back downs. What do you think went so wrong for Carolina defensively where NC State does shoot 55% from the field?
Yeah, I don't think NC State ever felt like they were being pressured. They felt like they could run whatever they wanted to run and not really feel any pressure defensively, whether that be on ball screens. And then DJ Burns, you know, he's one of those players. I felt like Carolina could have really set on his left hand to where, or his right shoulder to where he couldn't get back to it. And I just thought they kind of just let him, you know, back his way down and then get to that left hand. He would have had to score over me. He would have to show me that he can turn to his left shoulder and be able to score. So, you could have changed that, but I just felt that Carolina didn't put any pressure on State and make them feel uncomfortable on the defensive end. And State's, they're one of the teams that struggle offensively in the half court. And I just thought that they look really good in the half court. So that lack of pressure defensively from Carolina, just State didn't feel like they were being forced out of what they wanted to do. They felt like they could run whatever they wanted to run.
And then we mentioned offensively for this North Carolina team, it's been a problem at times this season where the offense gets like dragged into the mud. And then when you have Elie Cadeau, you have Harrison Ingram, and you have Cormac Ryan combined 27% from the field, it's going to be tough for North Carolina. Why do you think this team did look so out of sync collectively in the second half offensively, to where it felt like a lot of their offense was, hey, we're going to give the ball to RJ Davis and we're going to see if he can kind of save us, because we really don't have any other answers right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think it's nothing complex to it. I was just looking back at the game, and I really think that they had the shots that they wanted. When I look back, Cormac had some wide open opportunities. Harrison Ingram had some wide open opportunities. And like, when I'm talking about wide open, like, I'm talking about no closeout. And they just didn't knock them down. And I thought that, so when I'm looking at it, I'm like, it wasn't the fact that Carolina couldn't get any shots, just the shots weren't falling. So, you know, naturally you go to the guy who has been hitting shots all year long, and that's RJ. And he's the one that kind of propelled them in that first half to get back in the game, when he started knocking down those threes and knocked down some difficult threes, which he has been through doing throughout the season. But it's hard for me to really just try to get, you know, complex with it, because it just simply boiled down to them knocking down shots. And I think that's the difference maker, is when Cormac and Elliot, or when Cormac and Harrison are hitting those shots, Carolina's a totally different team, where you don't have to rely on RJ shooting 26 shots a game, or 26 shots like he did in this game. So, I just think the key going into this NCAA tournament is, can those guys kind of relax and get back into that rhythm, and being able to knock down shots? Like, even if it's, you know, Cormac going, you know, 4 for 6 rather than going 2 for 7. From the three, or 1 for 5 from the 3-point line, rather, you know, getting 4 threes and then getting, you know, Harrison maybe knocking down 1 3, it changes the ball game for them.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, how there were a few moments in that game. RJ missed a couple of really good looks from three, and Cormac missed a couple of good looks, where if Carolina hits some of those, then you could be talking about a completely different outcome and
yeah,
kind of shifting the momentum in a building that when NC State was making a run, it was loud for NC State, but overall that was still like a 75-25 crowd in favor of Carolina.
Oh yeah.
And the Carolina fans were just kind of waiting for something to cheer about or get back in the game. One thing I want to talk about from the NC State game, and maybe if Carolina can employ it in some of their tournament games, it felt like with how, you know, people thought 5 games in 5 days would be kind of difficult for NC State. One of the things that I think really worked for Carolina late trying to get back into the game is deploying the full court pressure, because you were speeding up NC State. They were making a lot of mistakes. Do you think the full court press for Carolina can not only be used in spots, but for longer periods of time to try to get teams to speed up, to try to get Carolina out in transition?
Yeah, it's hard, because it does put a lot of pressure, or it does put a lot of, a lot of mouths on the players to do something like that. Can it be done? Yes. But have, you know, up until this point in the season, they haven't had to do it as much. The only game that stood out to me was the Florida State game. And I'm trying to think some other games where they were just trying to change the pace of the game. I think Georgia Tech was another game. They tried to do it a little bit just to try to change something up. I think it's good to have in the bag. They probably could have implemented it a little earlier in the game, or in the second half, just to kind of, you got an NC State team that's already tired, you know, speed them up and really get them tired. You know what I'm saying? I think that could have been something that, could have been the game plan, is, hey, let's attack those legs a little bit earlier to see what they can do. So I thought that's something that they could have done. But I think it's good to have in the bag, especially when you talk about going into the tournament. But it could have been something that could have been implemented, earlier in the second half to just try to get them tired a little bit earlier.
Yeah, and one of the things that I thought from being in the locker room post-game and listening to some of the players' comments post-game that was both worrying but also refreshing with how honest they felt they were was that a lot of them were echoing the same statement that NC State just wanted it more, and that was something that was visible when you're on the court, when one team is playing for their tournament life and the other team is not, and safely in the field. And I thought that was a bit contrasting from the game against Pitt, where all the players were like, you know, this player was on all ACC, that's why I was coming out attacking, or this player was the sixth man of the year and I wanted to show right. why I think I should be the sixth man of the year. So is it concerning a bit to kind of hear that NC State players were just outworking Carolina, or is that just something you kind of say after a game you lose and you don't really have too many answers?
Yeah, I think that's just like a cliche saying that they wanted it more. I don't think another team wants it more. I just think they come out and they're playing a little bit harder. They're controlling the controllables. And playing hard is something that you can control no matter what the circumstances are. And, you know, that's interesting to hear that they wanted it more, because you're competing for a championship. If we look back to Duke, all the guys are saying, no, we don't want to share the title. We want it outright. So what's the difference between that game and this game where you get a chance to look back and say we won a conference ACC tournament? There's no difference in that. When a championship is on the line, you come out and compete regardless of what the circumstances are. So I just think, you know, that's just a saying that that when you don't have the answers, you know, and you really don't know what the problem really was, that's kind of something you resort to. So I just think that's an excuse. You don't, in a championship game, you got to bring it no matter what. And I just thought that NC State just, you know, they caught lightning in a bottle, and they kind of knew what was on the line, and they just came out and they really fought for it. And it showed. And it could have been a little bit of, for Carolina, hey, we already beat State twice, you know, we probably have them a third time. And that's the wrong mentality you want to come out and out of the tunnel with, because every game is different and every situation is different. And now you ran into a situation where a team at like NC State just got hot and they were on a roll.
Yeah, not only did NC State get hot, but it seemed like every break and every play that they had to make wound up going in their way, and
they made it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You look, they're trailing to Louisville in the first game of the tournament. They are down six with like 45 seconds to Virginia. And then North Carolina is up one at halftime. That's a game that you would assume North Carolina puts away more often than not for that championship. But a quick break so I can remind everybody about our friends over at Johnny T-Shirt. If you're going to be in Chapel Hill, you could visit Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street. If not, no worries. You could go online to johnnytshirt.com. They have everything that the Carolina fan could possibly want. The hats, the T-shirts, the jerseys, you name it, they've got it. It's great people, great customer service. And don't forget, Inside Carolina premium subscribers save 10% off their orders. Moving our attention to the NCAA tournament, Selection Sunday just passed. UNC gets the one seed in the West region. There was some debate whether or not Carolina would hold on to that one seed. It was the initial conversation was Tennessee or North Carolina. Then Tennessee loses, so it was North Carolina or Arizona. Then Arizona loses, and then Carolina loses. And then all of a sudden, Iowa State starts popping up out of nowhere for some of the bracketologists. But Carolina does hold on to the one seed in the West region. When you were playing, how important was it for your teams to get that one seed and kind of control either where you're going or have an easier path to get to the championship?
Yeah, it is. You know, you do want the one seed because you kind of control where you are going. You know, like We played in South Carolina. It kind of it felt like a home game for us in both of our first two games. You know, even though we almost lost our second game, the basketball gods were on our side against Arkansas back in 2017. So, you know, but you get a chance to be a little bit closer. And that first game, you can kind of, you know, you can kind of, there have been one seeds that went down in the past, you know, couple of years. But, you know, historically, the one seed has always beat the 16 seed. And so you kind of get a fill-in game to get everything going and get yourself prepared and settled. And so having that one seed is important. And then also just being able to control where you're going. But, you know, after those first two rounds, you know, it's go time then. But if you look at, like, you know, Carolina hypothetically could play at Michigan State or you know, Mississippi State. So you want that first game to get yourself settled in, but it's go time after that first one.
One of my favorite parts about Selection Sunday is watching all the teams kind of gather together and having these watch parties for the bracket reveal. Any good watch party stories from your time at Carolina? Where were you guys kind of going?
We always had it at Coach Williams' house. So Coach Williams and Wicked Wanda always had the hospitality. You know, for us, it was a little bit different. We were always relaxed just because we knew that we would be in the tournament. You just don't necessarily know who you will be playing. So you kind of have that, you know, that anticipation to see where you are and who that matchup will be. But it was always relaxed for us. And we would just enjoy being around one another. Shortly after, once we knew where we were and kind of figured out our path and who we would have to potentially play, Coach would always turn the TV off and then he would give us a message. And it was always, you know, starting at the first practice every single year, he always said that we always had a chance to win a national championship. The talent, the guys that were in that circle, we had the talent to be able to win the national championship. And that was always the goal, because it helped us keep one thing in mind throughout the season. And so we would talk about that and then we would just get ready to go. So nothing special. But I think being at Coach Williams' house with all the memorabilia around and everything that he went through, I think it gave us a motivation to see like what Coach has done and what we could potentially do. And we wanted to be a part of his legacy and a part of all that greatness that was hanging up on his walls and sitting on his tables.
Speaking of Roy, I saw him at the ACC tournament. Retirement looks great on him.
It does. I mean, my man is loving it. My man's texting me during the game. You know, he just laid back, man, as he should. And I tell you one person that's enjoying it, Wanda, because Wanda's like, I got my man next to me. We just travel. We just watch games. He doesn't have to come home and all mad, and I don't have to deal with that anymore. So it's it's good life for the Williams.
when he's texting you during games, is he texting you like, hey, Joel, when you're on ACC Network later, maybe this is what you should say?
No, I sent him a video of my golf swing and asked how it looked.
What was his analysis?
He said that it's beautiful. So I said, you know what? Okay, that's good signs that I'm making improvements. And then he threw out a joke about Boeheim. You know, those are two Hall of Fame coaches. And he was just sitting there saying that Boeheim looked like he was about to fall asleep before the game. So, you know, we got to keep Coach Boeheim up over there. We got to tap him. We got to talk to him, keep him in, keep his juices flowing so he doesn't fall asleep.
Hey, man, those 8:30 starts. We might need to move that up on Championship Saturday.
We do. And we got two overtime. So it was like we got out of there like 1 o'clock and then get to bed at 2 o'clock and it had to be right back at the gym. Oh, Boeheim was struggling a little bit.
From DC to now North Carolina is playing in Charlotte. UNC 12-1 all time in the Queen City in the NCAA tournament. You mentioned playing in South Carolina for an NCAA tournament. what kind of advantage does that give UNC where, first off, you're playing a 16 seed, but then in that trickier 1-8 matchup or the 1-9 matchup, you're going to be playing in front of what should be, you know, 90% of your fans.
Yeah, that, like, it's valuable to be in front of your fans and have it to where it is. It feels like a home game. Sometimes in the midst of the down times in the game, you know, you can have that energy behind you and the crowd getting loud, and being able to will you to be able to make a change. So that's valuable. You know, with the tournament, man, it's really about just finding a way, and then also being able to, the best teams that that really have success are the ones who are able to move from game to game and really dissect the scouting report and be able to adjust quickly. And that's what it's really about. Like that 16, that going against that 16 seed, now you're going against an 8 or 9 seed. That's a jump in competition. So the one thing you don't want to do is get into that first game and play down to your competition. You want to keep it going because you have a short turnaround on a Thursday, Saturday, Friday, Sunday, and that competition level steps up. So that's why I said it's important to be able to go into that first game with the mindset that we're trying to play like we're playing in the second game, because you just don't want to get lulled into playing down to your competition and then all of a sudden you have to rev it up. So, but being able to play Charlotte, you don't have to travel as far, and you can play right in your backyard where you can have the fans right behind you.
With the 16 and then the 8-9, what are the practices and the preparations like for each game when Carolina doesn't know its opponent for Thursday's game yet until Wagner and Howard play, and then you have a quick turnaround for a Saturday game against either a pretty good Mississippi State team or a pretty good Michigan State team? What are the practices kind of like?
Yeah, the practices are, I think the best thing that you can do throughout the NCAA tournament is work on your strengths and do it to the best of your ability consistently throughout the game. Because if you get caught up in trying to figure out every single thing that the opponent is doing, then you're taking away from what it is that you're doing. And with these short turnarounds, there's no way to 100% scout a team. And I think that's, you know, that's the problem that you run into, is that you don't have much time to scout these teams. So it's more about, okay, what is it that we want to do? And you have to focus on your principles and what in your concepts, and do that as best as you can. So I think a lot of these teams are trying to, you know, you have a barometer of what it is that you do and that you've done well throughout the season. It's, let's look at tape and let's see how we can clean those things up. It's just not enough time to be able to scout these other teams. They're like 3 or 4 things that you can focus on. One of those is making sure that you're locking in on the guys who could potentially hurt you. You know, the guys that are at the top of the scouting report. But from there, you really just want to focus on your strengths and try to do those as often as possible throughout the game.
And then with the bona fides of a national champion, most outstanding player in the Final Four, how did you approach the tournament mentally and not really get so consumed with the thought like, oh, man, there's 67 other teams, there's, you know, a lot of deserving teams, there's a lot of good teams, and not really get caught in the mindset like, if we lose, our season's over.
Yeah, that's the pressure of it, man. Some guys are built for it, some guys aren't. I think for Carolina in particular, they have two guys that they can lean on, RJ and Armando, that they can you know, help those guys can help other guys understand what it takes to be able to navigate your way through each and every game. I know it's a cliche saying, but you really do have to focus in on each and every game and not get bogged down by who you could potentially play in, all of these hypothetical situations. You have to take it one game at a time, because as I always say, all it takes is for a team to get hot in one game. That's all it takes. You know, it's not the NBA finals where you got seven games or best of seven. You know, this is a one-hit wonder, and you can get knocked out in that one game. So it's really about focusing on that game and then worrying about the rest later on. Like, what we would do is we would go in, we would, you know, focus on our scouting report for that first game. Bam, we throw that behind us after we get that game out of the way. And then that night at snack and dinner, or at dinner, no, we would do dinner and then we would come back for snack, because the coaches had to get some time to prepare for that next opponent. We would just go right into looking at film. And, you know, coaches on the assistant coaches, once they figure out who's in the region, you know, they disperse who needs to, what teams they need to be looking at, and they're already getting filmed. So it's up to the coaches to be able to look ahead. But for the players, you have to focus on your matchup and what you're supposed to do in that particular game. And then once we get to it, the assistant coaches will do their jobs to be able to get us the video and the scouting reports on those players, so we can start marinating on what we need to get ready for, you know, if it's a Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday game, and get ready for it and to go over that and practice and walk through. You're not practicing as hard, but you're walking through some of those plays so that you can mentally see what's going on. And then from there, now you got to take on that game. So that's how you navigate your way through the NCAA tournament.
Before we wrap up, a big shout out to our friends at Congruity. Congruity is a North Carolina-based national coverage local presence company with personal support straight from the Tar Heel State. Congruity is empowering small and mid-sized business owners with HR and payroll outsourcing, enabling you to grow your business while they take care of your greatest assets, your people. And they are doing it with top-of-the-line technology and services for every stage of your business's growth with a state-of-the-art online platform. Congruity, they are obsessed with customer service, where they become part of your team. They do the heavy lifting, providing essential admin support with a single point of contact and support available on demand with services that are tailor-made for you, transforming your organization. Congruity has helped hundreds of businesses improve and enhance their day-to-day lives, level up your HR capabilities, save money, unlock game-changing growth. Visit congruityhr.com/Tar Heels to learn all about Congruity. Fill out a quick form to be connected to their consultants, and they'll give Inside Carolina listeners or viewers a payroll and HR assessment for free. That's congruityhr.com/Tar Heels, congruityhr.com/Tar Heels. All right, back to the episode.
Hubert Davis echoed a similar sentiment in a press conference in the lead up to the tournament games this week, where he was basically describing it as like, we're playing a 4-team tournament in Charlotte. We win that. We're playing a four-team tournament in LA. We win that. We're playing a 4-team tournament in Phoenix, and trying to, you know, simplify to where, you know, North Carolina doesn't have to play every one seed in this tournament. North Carolina doesn't have to play every two seed in this tournament, and not really thinking of it as what's down the road for you, and more focusing on what's in front of you. But yep, for us, we don't have to take that one game mentality. So
no.
Before we get started this weekend, I just want to ask you, the Elite Eight matchup, North Carolina, Arizona, the Caleb Love reunion, how badly do you want to see that matchup?
I want to see it. I think it's not only selfishly, but I think it will be a great story. When you talk about like what NC State did, like that's a great story. You know, people live for that during these times. And that's what's so great about March Madness is like, you know, usually if you're a fan of a team, you usually focus on that team. Or, you know, if you're a fan of a conference, you focus on that one particular conference. What's so great about March Madness is that you get to hear all of these stories about what's been going on through the season, what these teams have been dealing with, what's going on. Like, this would just add to it. Like, think about that. You got two two players that played with one another on the same team win ACC Player of the Year and Pac-12 Player of the Year. You got not only that, both of these guys took your team to the national championship, 15 minutes away from winning the national championship. I think it is, it's the story that college basketball needs. And I would pay money, and I would, you know, want to go see that game. I don't know if that will happen, but I would love to go. I would love to see this. That would be one hell of a matchup. Not only just those two players, those are two teams that are really good. So it could potentially happen. And like I said, if that story is, if it's there, it would be one heck of a story that college basketball and the NCAA tournament needs.
Yeah, the committee takes some flack at times in terms of what teams get in and what teams get left out and what they're looking at and what they aren't looking at and what's important. But nobody could say that they don't know what the best storylines are, because this is something that I think people have been calling for the entire season.
They knew it was going on.
Yeah. The second they're like, oh, North Carolina's a one, Arizona's a two.
Perfect.
They're going to be in the same bracket, but a lot of good stories, and looking forward to the games. North Carolina in action March 21st, the Thursday, 2:45 tip against Howard or Wagner on CBS. Joel, appreciate the time as always, and appreciate everybody watching and listening.
Yes, sir. Let's see if our brackets can stand up this weekend, because I don't think so, but go Heels.
We should put out a bracket challenge. We'll create a bracket challenge, and everybody who listens to this podcast can join it.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.